Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
Now's my shit together, is my shit together.
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, I'm on base, Taxi Jacks. I'll come out. Ricky on the board, SP Futures down 4, NASDAQ Futures down 25. We were down a little more a bit ago. GM came out and was assessing their tariff issues, kind of set the market down. But the market is very resilient. I mean, yesterday we were down pretty heavy and almost made it back to unchanged and then sold off a little bit on the close. But there's a bit under the market, and I think I know where it's coming from. But do we have Professor Carl?
Oh, you do. You do indeed.
How are you, bud?
Well, you know, this is a lot of interesting things going on.
You're not kidding. What about, are you guys next, Tennessee, making an LLC out of your athletic department?
You know, that's, I'm not very surprised that that's the direction this went. I do, however, take extreme amusement at what Nico had happened to him when he decided to play extortionist instead of honoring the agreement that he made originally. And Harpel down here said, up yours. Now, I'm sure he didn't make that decision entirely on his own. You know, he has a boss, okay? but the ADs, the athletic department basically said, nope, we're not doing this. I think it was actually one of the wiser things I've seen in an awfully long time. And now, not only did he get less money, okay, I mean, it's great. We basically swapped quarterbacks with UCLA. But not only does he end up with less money, he gets to pay California state taxes.
Well,
there weren't any here. So, yeah, that's a little bit of a problem. But you know the other thing that's interesting is that from a geopolitics standpoint, and a trade standpoint and all this other stuff, the recriminations have already started with, well, you know, Trump is why the Canadians decided that they still wanted to have a bunch of WEF stooges run their country. No, he's not. You folks are a sovereign nation. You can make your own decisions, and you can pay for them too.
Well, we're paying for this guy.
Well, this will get rather interesting. We're certainly paying for this. But the other thing that I find interesting is that all the assertions that were made that we were going to be the ones who were going to have to cave on the China thing. There's plenty of indication that that's going exactly the wrong way from Xi's standpoint, yet he can't say it. And so there's all of a sudden now there are circulating lists of things that are on the to China side being exempted. And that I find very interesting because, of course...
Yeah, but Carl, this isn't a TV game.
Oh no! Well, I understood, Chief. But here's the thing, okay? As I pointed out when Trump was elected for the second term, I said, look, the rebalancing, the destruction of the exploit the environment, exploit the humans, business model, whether it be with illegal immigration, whether it be with the crap that is. Supposedly technically legal, but actually isn't. The H-1B nonsense and the F-1 and OPT program and all the interconnection there. All of which, by the way, is against the law.
Well,
You're confusing immoral with illegal.
No, it's illegal.
Well,
but the basic problem with all of this, and it's the same problem we have with the medical system, it's the same problem we have with so many other areas, is that a law that is not actually enforced is simply a cudgel to beat the guy you don't like over the head with, and the guy you do like gets to do it and screw somebody.
This is going out of... Why do you suppose?
Well, it's been going out of control for a very long time.
Well, no, how long? I mean, I was knowing you were going to be on today, driving home last night, and I was thinking about what we were likely to talk about. And I don't... Somewhere along the line, people have always had... Somebody's always had a little bit of an edge on somebody else, law-wise, whoever. And there's a certain amount of... Maybe you can find the word. I lived in Chicago for a long time, and I know that, you know, when I was young and all of a sudden somebody was out of work, you became a precinct captain and you got, you know, a job as a bridge tender or something. So, but right. these weren't good jobs. They weren't, and you didn't do much as a precinct captain. But everybody always showed up for work. I mean, it was
right.
And was there always a little bit of a wink and a nod? I think the answer is yes. It's just the way people are. There's a little grease always in the system.
Oh, always.
And to a certain extent, some of the professors here in Chicago, and where I'm going with this, is just one crazy goofball's opinion, meaning me. I mean, George Stigler, actually, who was won a Nobel Prize for political economy, actually gave a lecture one day, and he opined about how he actually thought the civil service system was not as efficient as the patronage system. In a lot of ways.
Chief, I think if you get down to the, you know, if you just analyze this economically in terms of money spent and outcomes, okay, and that's, and leave the rest of it out, you know, take the so-called fairness element out of it, right?
But it was fair. You could be a precinct captain too if you wanted to.
Well,
it wasn't unfair.
Well, I might have to pull somebody's pants down and, you know, do something obscene in order to get the position if I, you know, wasn't of the right family lineage or whatever. But yes, I mean, this is true. But
let me get to my question. My question is,
okay,
when did this become totally out of control to where
a
firm like Microsoft becomes, just eats up everybody along the way for 30 years and never much gets a slap on the wrist? I mean, where does this become to the point where we're talking, you know, billions, and that, you know, who gets the job before the next guy, and a little bit. I mean, I think that people in the World War II, I use the example all the time, the guys who made the PT boat engines maybe in Buffalo probably got a little 5% more if you knew the right people. But by the way, it was spent in the local stores, local saloons, and you shared it with the workers to a certain extent. And how did that become today, where there doesn't seem to be any limit on how much you can grab and how much people can go for?
Oh, well, that's what I was about to explain it.
We better take notes on this one because I can't explain it.
Oh no, I think I know exactly what happened, and this is the downfall. So the patronage, as it originally existed at the federal level and you know, to a large degree at the state levels as well, it didn't matter what your position was within the government when the regime turned over, and it always eventually did, right? Because we've always been a two-party system in the United States. I mean, you know, one party may fade away and, you know, be replaced by another, you know, Whigs, for example. But we're not a parliamentary system. We've got a different, you know, there's quite a bit of a difference there in terms of organization, right, in terms of how it works.
That's for sure. The parliamentary system isn't better. In some way. Well, again, it depends on the people, Carl.
Both have their good and bad.
If the people are honest, then either system's probably okay. If they're not, neither is okay.
Well, both have their good and bad.
Yeah.
It's okay. But the thing is that being a two-party system inherently means that when the pendulum goes too far to one side, you know, when you start thinking that it's a really good idea to start cutting off little boys' wee-wees and, you know, and cutting off little girls' breasts, significant percentages of the population are going to rebel against that, and say, hey, you know what? I don't think so. Same thing with, you know, with boys on the girls' volleyball team spiking the ball at, you know, 9 or 9.
Why does that become, every person I talk to from the conservative side brings up the girl with the broken nose. I don't want that to happen. I think it's crazy. But should that be swinging national policy to one way? And is that the most amazing thing that ever happened in the world? When we played baseball all the time, we were 12 girls on the block all played. I mean,
yeah,
is that the national policy we should be talking about? Should that be swinging, you know, is that the tail that's wagging the dog? Because Trump, you know, loves to do that. He loves the response he gets from people.
Oh no. I would argue, no, there is a very serious problem with this. And that
there
is,
but is it, is it, is it worth all we're going through?
In when it comes to the basic illness and the response and the ultimate response, yes, it absolutely has to be stopped. It needs to be stomped on and the earth salted for wherever those people stood, because the problem that all of this has, and I went into this at some length with a podcast that my daughter and I did, and she let me do it. For somebody that is young and still, you know, in the young and full of cum, you know, phase of life, right? I mean, we all went through it. Boy, I'll tell you what, if you think the backlash that you've seen so far, Chief, is something, boy, you better be sitting down.
Well, I mean,
here's the thing with this. And you know, and she's a girl, too. All right. You know, I mean, there you go. But here's what you have to understand. And what nobody wants to deal with is that you can go down the road of there's no such thing as an illegal, and oh, by the way, judges are immune from the laws themselves. They can't be arrested for violating the very same law that you and I...
The jackbooted people in the building are the problem for a lot of people. Not the fact that she was arrested. The fact that we have these goon squads running around is a problem.
Well, no kidding, right? But here's the thing. When you refuse to vet anybody, and by the way, all of that is it's a crime.
You know that I'm not pushing for any of this weird stuff that you're against. What I'm saying is, don't become like my dentist, okay? That was so very upset with me because I voted for Gore and not Bush over the abortion issue, and then 2 years later, the guy was absolutely he was almost suicidal that Bush invaded. Wherever the hell he invaded with like no
reason.
Be careful the price you pay for this stuff.
Oh no, I mean some of the, you know, it's really easy to go off the edge, you know, go off the end of the earth, so to speak, right? But here's the thing that I've been talking about for quite a long time, and we just got another set of statistics out, and nobody wants to deal with this. Okay, Chief, you don't want to deal with it. None of the people in the political sphere want to deal with it. But there is nothing you can do about it except to stop the craziness. All right.
Well, and you got to stop the crazies. How do you do that when half the country doesn't know what a moral is?
Well, here's the problem. Well, no, the law. Listen.
Hey, I got a couple of real specific issues this morning, but because we're going to talk about this whenever it'll be ongoing. But
yeah.
What do you think?
Well, let me.
Yeah, go ahead. Keep going. Finish, and then we'll.
Yeah. So let me. One of the consequences, okay, we just saw a consequence for environmental whack jobism in terms of green energy and all this other crap, okay, which I've been raising hell about for a long time. Not only is it unreliable, not only is it from a cost point of view, makes your economy uneconomic because
plus
it's more expensive.
It depends on where you get the power. It might not even be more efficient.
It's not more efficient, but it also has another problem in that it has no flywheel. And Spain just had their entire grid collapse as a direct consequence of 80% of their energy coming from non-flywheel sources right in front of when it happened. That's why it blew up in their face. And they're not talking about it because it had been some terrorist somewhere that started taking lines out or, you know, taking a sawzall to transmission towers or, you know, whatever have you. They would have been out there immediately with that. Nuh-uh. This was an ordinary imbalance, an ordinary demand surge or a short somewhere And because there was no flywheel effect within the system, all of those things that were in that area and had no inertia to them had no choice but to disconnect or be destroyed. And as soon as that chain starts, you're screwed. And this is the consequence of taking all those coal-fired power plants, turning them off, because they all have huge rotating steam generators that have a tremendous amount of rotational momentum, and they resist this kind of thing.
Hey, I gotta tell you, buddy. Other than me, the only person that is listening to this show and knows what a flywheel is me.
Well, here's the other thing. You know what's even worse? Okay, one of the entire chapters in my book in 2011, Leverage, was on power and how to have a stable, predictable cost energy infrastructure, which you have to have because behind every unit of economic output, no matter what it is, good or service, is a unit of energy. Like it or not, that's an immutable law of nature. All right. So we have to live within the physical world. We may not like the things it imposes on us, but it's there. And I laid out a path forward using technology we already knew how to do that would give us 500 years of stable, known cost output. And not only that, make us completely immune from any kind of petroleum supply shock from people we don't like very much.
What do you think the powers that be want that?
Well, they probably don't. But you know what? You know who does want it? You know who is doing it and who just demonstrated it? China. And by the way, they did it exactly down the road that I was talking about 15 years ago.
Well, except they have such a disregard for their people, no matter what they do, seems misguided in some ways.
Well, but you know what? These guys just
they also don't have any inline phone things, which maybe we wouldn't today either, but still.
Well, they just demonstrated and proved they figured the engineering out, which is, there you go. Online refueling with a liquid salt, molten salt, thorium-fueled reactor, which is exactly the technology that we figured out how to pioneer at Oak Ridge. We did it in the 1950s and 1960s. We ran it for 4 years, and then we abandoned it because you can't make bombs out of the material it makes. But it is a nearly ideal power-generating situation. Now they have to do the next step, the last one, is to figure out how to online reprocess. They figured out how to online refuel. You online reprocess, you solve 90% of the waste problem, almost 100%. Of the hazardous storage problem for your
every time there's something new in this country, you're screwing somebody's axe in the behind, and those people have all the power.
Okay, well we can sit around and we can.
I'm not for it. You know that.
Chief, all I'm saying is that we can sit around with our finger in our butts,
which we're doing,
and worry about driving the price of stocks up.
Why?
Or somebody else is going to do it. And right. When they do, you're
Carl,
screwed.
I'd like to get to a couple other summary, but if it's that obvious, and nothing's ever that obvious, but if it makes as much sense as you make it out to be, why is the Googles of the world trying to start up an old reactor instead of building one of these new ones that seem like they're cheaper to start with?
Because in the United States, it is essentially, you want to start up a new one?
Oh.
The Sierra Club sues you. These guys sue you. 25 other people sue you. And incidentally, it's all bullshit, because if there is a non-carbon producing energy system that we can come up with in the United States or anywhere in the world, it would happen to be based on nuclear power. All right.
Yeah.
Can I explain to
Ricky what a flywheel is for a second?
Well, yeah. Basically,
Ricky, you know what a flywheel is?
I have no idea.
If you ride a bicycle, it's the reason you can. Because the wheels turn and generate angular momentum, which resists being changed in its direction or speed.
In old manufacturing at Pullman, you had these big, huge presses.
No, I'm getting
which would take a 4-inch wide piece of metal and come down and stamp it in a die, and all of a sudden you got an angle. Well, the thing that powered that, you could either have something really powerful to do it, or you could use something with very small energy and turn this big honking flywheel. was it weighed a t- no weighed almost a ton, maybe did, depending on the size of the machine. Right. Every time you hit the buzzer or whatever the thing to go down and the, this press to come flying down with all this power, all it did was tap into the momentum of the flywheel. It took like a little motor to get going, and then it would just get back. It would be going however many miles an hour, Carl, and the way down, you'd take 10 miles an hour off it, and give it a couple of minutes, and it'd build right back up, and you could do it again. But the power to turn the flywheel, it's like, you know, with ball bearings and stuff, was nothing compared to the power that it would be like. It's like rolling a car downhill and then whacking it into something, right?
Right. It's stored energy, essentially. Yeah. Although in the case of a flywheel, it's angular momentum, but it's inertia.
But I mean, those things are so powerful, and the motors running them were, you know, maybe big as both fists.
Yeah, they weren't that big.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have to be, because you integrate that force over time. But the thing is that we, within the United States, within every country, okay, women have the ultimate veto. They can say, you know what, this grift, this fraud, whether it's in the medical system, whether it's in the political system, whether it's in the business system, whether it's, you know, exploiting, you know, hey, if my kid is below the median, he's never going to get a decent job, because if he goes to work for Disney doing basic IT stuff, which is, I mean, you got to have some skill, but you don't have to be a rocket scientist to do that job. You just have to be fairly good. And you know, one day the CEO of Disney is going to decide, hey, guess what? You get to train these 400 Pajits that come in here from India, and if you don't, you don't get any severance. By the way, if you do, you're fired anyway. All right? And incidentally, this is illegal. All right? But nobody goes to jail for doing it. So, you know, Disney does it, then IBM does it, then Microsoft does it, then and pretty soon, three-quarters of the people...
One thing we don't do is we never import a CFO from India who's willing to work for a lot less. That we never do.
Oh, no! And then, as if that's not bad enough, if you want to talk about racial, you know, discrimination and class preference, you know, the two are just two different names for the same thing, okay? Those guys get in here, they get up into middle management, and all of a sudden they won't hire any white people. All right, and you take a look out in Silicon Valley, you're going to find a lot of that. All right, that's illegal too, but of course nobody goes to jail.
We got to talk markets here for a few minutes, but
yeah.
The one thing we always kind of are jousting about, the bottom line of you and me jousting, is you continually bring up the illegal piece.
Yeah,
I bring up the fact that it's immoral. That's why there's a law there. And in fact, most laws, they don't force people to do anything, unless even murder. You don't get pinched after you kill somebody. The laws are there just to pick out the two or three people out of the thousand that somehow don't have any morals and don't. But if everybody walks that way, it doesn't matter if it's a law or not. I mean, Jefferson said.
No argument, Chief. I mean, the reality of it is that you know, somebody who is not inclined to steal isn't going to steal whether it's illegal or not.
Right.
Okay, but the problem is that about 10% of the population are psychopaths.
Well, you have to do like they said at the University of Chicago. You have to make the idea of stealing, murder you can't do, but the idea of stealing not worth it. Your chances
of
being caught.
Well, that's right. The odds
chance
of getting
caught, time the fine should be more than you stole.
Well, and the penalty has to be high enough. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the way. You know, that's the way.
You assume
that
even crooks are rational to some degree.
Well, it most of them are to some degree. Okay, I mean, now somebody who's stoned on, you know, God knows what the drug is today, maybe not. But the thing is, though, is that we have gone so far down this road, but the veto that comes from this, and it's not just in the United States, it's all over the world, is that women can shut their legs.
Or get on a pill.
I mean, hey, that genie's not coming out of the bottle, all right? You know, I mean, we've loosed that one out. We have effective birth control now, and
you'd never know it. We only got a couple minutes. The last week we had the sell off, and we've got we hated Powell. Now we don't mind Powell. All this crap coming out of. Not to mention, oh, by the way, I don't know if you were listening yesterday. One of the guys in the office here was still takes guitar class, right? He loves music, right. and on Thursday night they go out for a beer after guitar lessons. There's a lady sitting next to him, and she's from a bond house, and he knew she worked there, but without any prompting, she goes, "By the way, are you guys seeing all this front running that we're seeing? We've never seen anything like it." Anyway, the money supply numbers that came out a week late, it seems like no matter what, you know, our POTUSes say, who's ever in office seemingly lately, no matter what our Fed chair says, we are locked in and have been locked in for 10, 15 years now on this 5 to 6% money supply growth.
Oh, yeah.
Which absolutely favors, and now we're right back to it. And I wonder, after 1 month's kind of pause, right after the election, where we only went up maybe to 4% rate, where this is not accidental that we're right on this number every friggin' month. And I think the Treasury guy must have gone to Powell, and Powell said, "Look, I'm giving you 5%. Which more do you want?"
Yeah. What else do you think you can get out of me?
And right. I think the Treasury guy went back at Trump and said, "Lay off this guy. He's doing exactly what we want." He may not sound like it, but he is.
Yeah,
I don't know that. But I'm saying somewhere along the line, but now the market has sensed that.
Right. Now,
in the last week, we're up every day, and we had, except for last night, we have mutual fund buying every day in the close. Somehow, in the last 5 days, the tone has changed, and it just happens to. Now these guys know the money supply numbers before I do. Just happens to coincide with this report coming out, and I'm going, they can say all they want while they're fighting inflation. No, they're not. They're pushing the markets up, and they're putting prices up, which satisfies the Bezos of the world. I mean, you talked about Tesla being a bad buy. What's it up? $40 since you last ran the show? Anyway, we have to sneak off the break here. I think we have Joel. I'm not sure about Kenny, so I'm sure he'll be hanging around. SP Futures down 2, NASDAQ Futures down 20. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, everybody. Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. SP Futures down a quarter. Yes, 25 cents. NASDAQ Futures down 11. We're down. We were up last night, and then we were down a little bit on the GM talking about the tariffs maybe hurting things, and then now we've kind of bounced right back here. I think the trend is seemingly to the upside here. Don't exactly know why, but I don't know if you want to fight it necessarily. And a lot of people aren't. We've had mutual fund buying. We had the bonds. Interest rates sneak back down from where they look like they're heading to the moon. So I think the Fed is doing exactly what the president wants, even though he's makes it sound like they aren't. Over in Europe, we have the machine here, I guess. Europe, the DAX up 127.6%. FTSE up 10, up 0.1%. CAC round down 21.3%. Europe stocks rise amid earnings bonanza with the banks, and I'm going to talk to Joel about that. I can't figure out these banks, whether they make money or don't make money, whether they're a good buy or not. That's kind of a weakness in the game. Volvo Cars drops 8.5%. That's not so good if you're Volvo. Nikkei up 134.4%. Hang Seng up 36.1%. Shanghai down 1%. Call that flat, which they've been doing nothing, Shanghai. Bonds up 2 basis points, 4.24, but pretty much buried in this range here. The bond unchanged, 2.51. We have oil is down again, 99 cents, 61.01. Oil cannot get out of its own way. Greg's been doing, I think they've been doing pretty good on the crack spread because RBOB is moving different than the oil, so I think they're making some money on that. Brent down $1.15 to $64.71. Natural gas up 5 cents, 339. Gold down today, down $23. It was up yesterday, 33.24. It seems like it's kind of settled in here in a mid to low 3300s. Silver up a quarter, 33.25. Foreign exchange, this is quieted down here again. But dollar slipping a little bit today, with the pound up almost to 1.1. I mean, the euro up to almost to 1.14. British pound 1.34. Crypto, another 360, 95,179. Artificial stocks are doing fine. It's always good. And why worry about a P.E. ratio if you got stuff that don't even have a P.E. ratio? Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:35 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. We'll have beautiful weather today. 70 degrees right now with a high of 72. We do have considerable morning cloudiness today, though. Might see some sunshine this afternoon. Windy and not as warm. Tonight will be partly cloudy and cooler with a low of 46 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 61 degrees right now with a high of 86. Plenty of sun. Tonight mostly clear with a low of 61 degrees. Traffic in Chicago. Iman Kennedy from Monroe's 11 minutes. 28 minutes Iman Edens from Lane Cook. Iman Eisenhower from Wolf, 25 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 17 minutes. And lastly, Iman Stevenson from turning 4 to the Dan Ryan, 26 minutes. NBA playoff first round game 4 is this week. Yesterday we had the Cavaliers beating the Miami Heat 138-83, winning the series 4-0. Golden State beat Rockets 109-106. The series is at 3-1 in favor of the Warriors. Today we got Bucks at Pacers 5 p.m., Pistons at Knicks 6:30 p.m., and Magic at Celtics 7:30 p.m. We also have Clippers at Nuggets at 9 p.m. That's my bad on that. NHL playoff is on as well. Game 4, Panthers beat Lightning yesterday 4-2, and Stars beat Avalanche 6-2. Lastly, MLB, Cubs at Pirates today at 5:40 p.m., and Diamondbacks at Mets 6:10 p.m. Back over to you guys.
We have Joel.
Yeah, good morning, Chief.
How are you, buddy?
I'm doing good. How about yourself? I'm
doing all right, except I missed my podcast yesterday.
I know. You know, that's a little bit on me, a lot on me. I was out last week and a little disorganized as usual, but we're gonna get things squared away. We really need your input.
Well, I absolutely love doing. Joel has this terrific podcast. Give yourself a shameless plug, come on, Joel.
Everyone knows about Free Market Prep, which is on from 8 to 9 at premarketprep.com YouTube. My buddy and I, Dennis, we've started another venture called Stock Trader Network. And the basic information that you get on that is better than anything you get except on this TV show. We just kind of feel CNBC, Bloomberg, Fox Business. They don't really tell you like the way it is. So we've started our own communication network, and watch out, Bloomberg, watch out, CNBC, watch out, Fox. Here we come.
You know what? You haven't piled back, and you never will, into the fact where you got to be nice to companies that advertise and who you're going to have on as your guests. You haven't dawned on that drain yet, like those guys have.
Oh yeah, I mean it's. I think the best way to put it, and why I enjoy being on this podcast, is, you know, you've been through a lot of different market cycles. You've been on the floor. You made the transition to the floor, which we know a lot of our colleagues never did. And then just the whole information, internet, you know, it just, things have changed so much over the years. It's good to give people, you know, COVID. Let's throw COVID in there. You know, just need a different perspective on the market. So that's what we're working towards. It's a big project, but I appreciate your help. And people can go to the StockTraderNetwork.com and check it out. We're really trying to help the individual investor from the new investor, you know, from the person that's just putting a couple shekels in the markets, to day traders, swing traders, and long-term investors. And it's hard to fit all your content into that audience, but that's what we're trying to do.
Well, good luck, and you know, I'm loving being a part of it. What do you think? When you say things change, they absolutely change in some ways, but I think both of us think that you end up coming back to fundamentals sort of at some point. The things that have changed is, you don't get to see the person you trade with, so the front running can be totally out of hand, and you're counting on the people maybe doing the front running to police it, which again is somewhat of an issue, if you don't you think? I mean, duh. It's totally, I think it's out of control, but that doesn't mean that you can't be an investor. It just means you have to change your theme a little bit. I mean, you can't invest the same way. I think it was the Obama administration. It has nothing to do with him. What, we didn't have a 1% move in what, a year and a half, two? And all of a sudden you have a 1% move every morning and maybe a 2 and 3% move every week. Well, the fundamentals, I think, are the same, but your strategies have to be somewhat different, and maybe your skill set needs to be a little bit different. Maybe it's not as easy as, you know, going to Robinhood and buying a few stocks they tell you on TV and waiting 5 years. Maybe it's...
Yeah, you just hit the nail on the head there, Chief. And this is a topic that we could probably talk about for 3 hours.
Without a doubt.
But, you know, what you're bringing up now, and I'm not, you know, we don't have time to go into it too deep here, but what's changed so much, and it started pre-COVID, but really picked up during COVID and after COVID, is a retail investor. I mean, you know, you talk about institutions and their order flow and their recommendations and what they're doing. The retail army, the retail mob, is a whole nother aspect of the markets. And if you're not taking that into consideration and you're trying to short a stock on fundamentals and you're not paying attention to the news flow, I mean, I'm not going to say I'm on Reddit, but there is such another party out there participating in the markets that if you're not aware of that, then you are at a severe disadvantage. And I'm not even talking if you're trying to do short-term trading, but I'm talking even with your long-term investing and looking at things. And, you know, how many people got caught holding the bag in GameStop? How many people got caught holding the bag in AMC?
Well, no, that's another whole topic, the momentum trading. And I was talking yesterday about it kind of the interesting part about doing the show, Joel, and I think you guys will find out or already have found out about doing your show, is that the real news is always between the stories. It's not, we're not CNBC where we read about this story and then we turn a page and read the next story and forget all about the connection between the two of them. Because generally, that's the story, is the connection between the two of them, right? And you can't, the momentum trading part, I was talking about the 9/11 and to a smaller extent, the invasion into Israel and how people had front run by option trading those essentially two events. I mean, as horrible as that is, fact is, yep, people did. And so to the point where now, and I think Dr. J was one of the first people to actually talk about this on the air when he was on CNBC, and he had a pretty good system, probably the first, that not just looked at an unusual activity. A lot of people did that. We used to do some of that, but we were never able to decide whether people are trading on the offers or the bids. In other words, to find out if there was something purposeful to the trade and not just a covered right that was huge or something. It was a neutral trade and people all of a sudden are going crazy over it. Well, yeah. But now all of a sudden people have this stuff. And if you look at like a GameStop, the thing I've never seen before up until 5 years ago is all of a sudden Joel Car Wash, you know, which might be a nice car wash, but it's not exactly a New York Stock Exchange biggie, all of a sudden starts running up. Everybody thinks somebody else knows something and starts buying Joel's car wash. But I've never seen that before. And that's what happened with GameStop. He sits there going, what are you buying? I don't know, but somebody must know something. What do you mean?
You know what? Car washes are popping up all over the place here. Are you trying to insinuate I should start a car wash?
You know,
company?
One of the ladies on the show that, again, died last year, her brother's boss did one of those in Florida. When they first came out with the all-cloth car wash, I think the guy maybe broke even on a $2 million investment in 9 months.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if he can do it anymore, but those things are cash cows.
They're popping up around here.
Yeah.
I keep a close eye on the real estate market, right? It's an investment asset. And I'm like, what the hell? Where? What? And I say to my buddy, I'm like, what's going up here? He goes, I'm like, this terrible piece of property, you know, angular, but it's on a major corner. I go, what the hell's going there? Car wash.
When was the last time you saw somebody wash their own car?
That's true.
People used to do that every Saturday morning. You get the hose out, the bucket, you wash your car. Well, now, first of all, half the people, look, you know, it's in a garage or a high rise, and everybody wants their car clean. They paid $80,000 for it. for God's sake. So what do you make of these, real quick question, what do you make of these money supply numbers? And I can't emphasize enough the connection between Trump all of a sudden liking Powell or not disliking him so much, and the fact that he's pouring money into the system, doing exactly what Trump wants him to do. Somehow or another, Trump has been made to realize that, I think. And then as soon as that happened, the market turned around. As soon as that happened.
Boy. Well, first of all, I was out last week. So, but that, you know, that doesn't mean, you know, what you're saying portends to a much wider time frame than that. I think the market right now is at a really critical point. You can talk about money supply. You can talk about interest rates. You can talk about tariffs. You can talk, you know, all these things, inflation, whatever, Powell. I think the market is at a point where it's either going to say tariffs don't matter. We have the world's strongest economy. And we don't know what Trump's going to do. All these companies are going to adjust, and la, 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 la. And we're just going to take, because I think we're at a very important level here. If we can retake this level after the mega cap earnings season, then I think you just have to switch from the neutral camp, which I'm at right now, very neutral, to bullish. And if the market realizes, you know, that there's a lot of uncertainty here, that companies cannot make long-term investment decisions based on short-term fluctuation policies, then I'm not necessarily saying we're going back for the lows of the move.
What?
I see some downside here. And I, frankly, after being gone for a week, coming back, seeing where the market is, I think if you're a long-term investor and you're fretting about not getting out over 6,000 in the S&P, and you were holding your you-know-what when we dipped to under 5,000, I think you seriously have to take a look at this market. Things have calmed down a little bit. I know you talk about hedging and things like that. I think this just may be the point where, you know, if you don't want to, be overexposed, but on the other hand, you don't want to miss up on the upside. I think that we're just, my levels are telling me that, my gut is telling me that, and with mega cap earnings coming out this week and the big boys, I mean, what's Apple going to do? How can Apple provide guidance, Chief? How can how can they tell you about the next month? If you have to build iPhones here, how long is it going to take to build the factories? Forever. Work
well, you know, we talked about that last week. There's 1.5 million people in China supporting the 14,000 that work for Apple.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's one thing, Joel, you and I tend to drop back, and I know you got to go here, but we tend to drop back into the, you know, we worry about tariffs, we worry about unemployment, we worry about growth in the economy. Yet we just went through a 5-year program where we shut the place down. And we poured so much money in the system, the market went up anyway. So I'm getting to the point where I don't look at any of this other stuff. I look at us as the next, I want to say this, almost like the next Weimar Republic, the next Argentina, the next Venezuela. No matter what happens, these guys are going to pour money in, and people with wealth are going to continue to make money until someday somebody, either the government comes out with a flash of transparency and gives you a real CPI number, or where people absolutely just revolt and say, I'm tired of hearing these idiots tell me that we're 3% inflation, where everything I know went up 10% last year, and there's some kind of a groundswell like there was in the 70s. Something's got to give. This idea of pouring money in, causing inflation, pushing up these prices, which I love and my clients love, and ignoring and lying about the inflation part, there's got to be an end game to that somewhere. But it's not about tariffs. It's not about unemployment. Nobody cares if anybody works, Joel. Nobody was working during COVID. It went straight up, right?
Yep. Okay. All right, Chief.
How's that for a doom thing?
Okay. All right. I got a hot, Chief.
All right, buddy. You take care. Do we have Kenny?
We do.
Hey, you're here. You sound good. Everything's good. How are you?
I'm here. I feel bad. Last week I was on. You kept talking and talking and talking. And then I finally had to hang up.
Really? We didn't. Wow. I mean, I...
Well, that's all right. It was great. I listened to the little conversation, but then 8 o'clock came and I had to hang up because I had something else to do. But
you got all kinds of stuff to do. You're on worldwide TV. If there was interplanetary TV, you'd be on there.
But I'm here with you today. That's all that's important.
How are you? What'd you make of what I just mentioned to Joel, the sort of doom and gloom stuff? That all of a sudden, it to me, and of course everybody else knows numbers before I do, the day I could check the money supply numbers and saw their back pumping money in the system is sort of the day when Trump said, this Paul guy is okay, and when the rally started. Am I the only one who caught that connection?
I don't know if you're the only one that caught that connection. I don't think you were.
No, I don't think so either.
It is what it is. I actually think, and I think we've talked about this, I think the worst is over, which doesn't mean we won't test a little bit lower again just to make sure that they defend those positions, because there was a lot of internal damage done to the markets over the last month with the speed at which kind of that decline happened and the nervousness and the anxiety that it created. There's lots of gaps in the charts if you see it, so a lot of those gaps are going to need to be filled, and in order to do that, the market's going to continue to kind of churn. So while I think the worst is over, I'm not necessarily saying, you know, the bottom's in, it's nothing but up is here. I don't think so, but it doesn't mean I'm not a buyer. I am. I like the market here. I like some of these stocks that have gotten really beaten up. But, you know, this week and next week are big weeks in terms of earnings data and economic data, and so that's just going to keep me sitting on the side kind of watching as it unfolds. We saw this morning already that Coke came out and said, look, we kept our forward guidance. It's good. We don't expect a lot from tariffs yet. General Motors comes out, and while they beat the number, they retracted their guidance and they froze their buyback, and so theirs was a little bit more negative. So Coke is up and General Motors is down, and the market continues to be confused. But I think those are individual conversations, and I think that investors are going to have to pay attention. You know, we're going to get 50 companies today. We'll get another 40 tomorrow. There'll be tech later, you know, tomorrow and later in the week, and that's going to also be very interesting and exciting, right? In terms of
They're hard to play, though. They're hard to play, Kenny. The volatility, the size of the straddles is huge. We used to do like five a day of these things. We haven't done one in a week, and I check all of them every day. They're priced wild.
Because I think there's still some anxiety out there, and so the volatility, you know, people expect the volatility, so the markets will be wide. Versus you know, tighter. But I think we'll start to see that come down, especially after we get through. I think what's going to be really key is the Microsoft, Meta, Amazon, Apple's news that comes out, right? As they're looking for, they are looking for generally strong results, healthy demand. They're going to see what happens with cloud spending by, you know, all the hyperscales, right? The large cloud service providers like you know, Amazon Web and Microsoft Azure and Google Cloud Platform, IBM Cloud, all that stuff.
What you just said is very interesting, and I think it's exactly what's going on. You mentioned that you think the market maybe is a good here and needs to go up, but the tariff stuff hasn't even started. It was like COVID. The market started to go up, and people weren't even dying yet.
The tariff stuff, you know, remains kind of a fluid conversation. They keep telling us that, you know, there's all these countries that are negotiating. They've got 18 deals that are, you know, somewhere on the table. And certainly they're not going to be done in 2 weeks, for sure. We all understand that. The deal itself might take months to accomplish. Yet if the outlines are published, we need, you know, a couple of base hits. We don't even need a home run. We just need a couple of base hits that say, okay, here's the outline of this deal with India. Here's the outline of this deal with China, Japan. Here's the outline with whatever. But in the end, all eyes are focused on, okay, what's the deal with China? Because that's really what they're making it's all about China.
But I don't see how anywhere along the line here, when we have the 10% on everybody now, right? Yeah. I don't see anywhere along the line that this is not accretive to prices that are already going up faster than people are telling us. I don't see how.
Sure. Do you really think prices are going up that fast? And where are you seeing it?
I'm seeing it in everything that other people aren't looking at. I don't see it in some of the stuff like gasoline. No, I mean some of the stuff that people always talk about, the implied price, car service, anything like that, any kind of service. Try and get a new air conditioner, Kenny. Try and get a new roof.
No, listen, I just got new brakes on my car. Trust me, I get it. That was more expensive than I thought it was going to be. But that's not something I'm buying every day.
But it's also,
right?
we I guess where I'm coming from here is we already have this price bubble that I think you and I totally agree on that has not been addressed either by the government or by wages. So any sort of inflation here, even if it's 4 or 5%, I think is twisting the knife that you've already stuck in people. I don't think people can handle even 4 or 5% from here. That's where I'm coming from, because I think the part that they when I heard when Audrey bought her car, the guy said we now have a finance department for service. I looked at the guy and I go, you got what? I mean, I never dreamed of that in my lifetime. Did you?
No.
You see these credit card debts going as high as they can be. You hear, you know, Nancy on Monday talking about how she's starting to do refinance for people that have 3% mortgages and they're paying 7 because they got so much money in their credit card, it's worth it to put it on a mortgage at 7. The leaks in the boat are all over the place.
Yeah, no, listen, I'm not suggesting that it's all clear. I do think that there's plenty of things to be worried about. I do, but I think this is just me. I'm not speaking for anybody. I'm in the camp that I think the worst of it is behind us, and that the next 100 or 200 days of his presidency that's where we're going to start to see some real change. It's going to take us into the summer. We're going to get that tax bill that's going to get signed. We're going to get hopefully some movement on trade and trade agreements, and that I think will settle the markets as it becomes clearer what they're going to look like. Look, if tariffs are so bad, how come every other country uses them? Right, they're all using them. It's not like we're the only one using tariffs. Every country uses tariffs, so it's a matter of
Why do you say that? We slapped a tariff on Switzerland; they don't have any.
Okay. So you picked the one.
What I'm saying is, when everybody says everybody has tariffs, the fact is they don't. I mean, some do, some don't. And a lot of people have protected.
The majority do. I think, it's clear. There's 100. There's what did they say? There's 50 countries that are coming to us to have a conversation. Those are all countries that have, you know, tariffs on our products. Yeah, but too, we have a new conversation.
There's people that are controlling the news. I mean, to a certain extent. Everybody claims it's all the liberals, right. But I don't think it is. You're talking about somebody that has a style. You blow the thing up, just like, I'm not paying anybody who built this building. Well, help me build this building. Come, we'll make a deal. That's a style. It seems to work someplace, maybe. Or it's worked maybe in New York someplace. It's not necessarily working worldwide, I don't think. But they're saying everybody's here to make a deal. Everybody's coming here to kiss my ass and make a deal. I don't see it, Kenny. And I don't see, you know, I think there's going to be deals that are made between Canada and India that we never wanted to see made.
Well, like what?
Well, I'm saying there's going to be, people are looking for other places to do stuff, and they're never going to look at us again like we were before. And
I debate that. They all need us, right? They all need our, they all
and,
need.
And we need them.
Well, correct. I'm not saying, I agree with you, which is why I think that I do think that trade agreements need to look. It's like anything, right? You make an agreement, 20 years goes by, the world changes, so you have to change the agreement. The same way with technology, the same way with, you know, look what happened to the markets, right? After 30 years, stuff changes, technology changes the way, so you have to remake the way markets trade.
I'm right with you, except we have somebody, and I listened to him and Dick Cavett in 1998, whatever the hell it was, and all he did was talk about Dick Cavett. He believes, in his mind, and I don't know what school he went to, every single time you have a trade deficit with somebody, you're getting screwed. And that absolutely is not true, Kenny. Absolutely is not true. So the entire premise is wrong.
Okay. Well, okay. So if the entire premise is wrong, then you got to start all over if you think the entire premise
is wrong.
Well,
but I'm saying, but that's not, if an island has some, you know, purple bananas and everybody wants to eat purple bananas, you and I, and we go and buy purple bananas from this place and they don't buy anything from us, but they use our dollars to go buy something somewhere else, I could do the economic, or I used to be able to do the economic math on the board that says, by the way, everybody benefits from that. Because the person that they buy the stuff from comes back here and buys something else. But his idea is, no, somehow these guys are screwing us. No, they're not. I mean, some of the places that he talks about, we have this huge trade. You know, we have a trade surplus with Canada.
Okay.
And so we
have a trade surplus with Canada.
But I'm saying some of these places, we have... Just the fact that these guys say we don't, or sometimes if you have a trade deficit, but the people here own the place, and the money comes back here, and you've got a current account deficit that is even, What's the difference? I mean, there's a lot theoretically in here that when you lob out this stuff to everybody that maybe doesn't see all this stuff or maybe hasn't gone through it, it's not all that, I mean, it's definitely not all that obvious that we're getting screwed. But people here for some reason like to think we have hardship in this country, to economic hardship. Now, it's nothing like the Depression yet or anything like that. But the idea that you can pin blame on somebody else is absolutely a political... People have been doing that forever to get in office. It's these guys' fault. It's always, God, if we didn't have these immigrants, you'd have this. And everybody in this city, we had 60,000 immigrants here. They're now totally assimilated. There's no places where, you know, mostly have jobs or living with somebody, whatever. 60,000 people. I mean, in New York, these other places had a much bigger problem than here. I understand it. But here, it was really not that big of a problem, Kenny. So the idea that, you know, every Hispanic in town was told that these guys are getting the citizenship ahead of you, and every black person was convinced they were getting welfare stuff that was intended for you. I mean, those were powerful. Is that what you... I mean, none of that was true. None of that was true. Yet
well,
everybody believes
none of that was true. Were we not spending all kinds of money on illegal immigrants at the expense of Americans? Were we not?
Well, everybody here was an immigrant. I'm saying but I'm saying, Kenny, the millions and millions and millions of dollars they were talking about in Chicago wasn't true. I mean, everybody blew up the numbers so they could get it from Washington, and Washington used the number. They're talking about how many bazillion dollars this was costing everybody. Kenny, there's 6 million people here. We're talking about 60,000. That's like how many people used to show up in 2 weeks in the Great Migration back in the 30s.
Yeah, but wait a minute. Were we not spending billions of dollars in New York and Chicago and California?
I haven't heard the count. All I hear, maybe if the next election somebody will say it was trillions of dollars. I don't believe these guys at all when they say this stuff. They're politicians.
Well, okay, I give you that.
But what's the final number in Chicago that was spent here? I don't know, and we'll never get it. It was something. I agree with you. It was something, and maybe it shouldn't have had to happen. That's probably true. But I also know that an awful lot of individual people gave a lot of that money.
A lot of the feeding of these people
came from the Chicago Food Depository, which people donate to. The city didn't pay for that.
No, the city didn't pay for that, but is the city paying for housing them, insurance, you know, when they go, they all walk into the hospital because they're sick. Who's paying all that? You and I aren't paying for
what's the number? We have how many gazillion homeless here to start with? I mean, that's bigger. I didn't see these guys. One of their biggest camps was by me, right?
Yeah.
Camps, and I didn't see anybody drinking. I didn't see anybody. I didn't see the huge puff of marijuana that I do going down the expresso when people have cars. I feel like I'm going. I feel like it's a Lone Ranger movie with the Indians with the smoke signals coming out of their car. I didn't see any of that. And after 5-6 weeks, I see people heading for the bus. They had jobs. I'm not saying everybody was a saint, but to say that there was a million murders there, I never even saw a fight.
I'm not sure that there were a million murders. I'm not sure who said that. But I do think that there was there was a lot of money spent supporting a lot of illegal immigrants that came over the border. You know, some flown in from the countries directly into other parts of our country, because we know that that's true. That, you know, that caused a lot of angst and a lot of disruption to our society. And I'm not saying immigrants shouldn't be allowed. They should be. They should absolutely, because you're right, we're all immigrants, but you've got to come in the right way versus the wrong way. And you can come in the right way. You can come in the right way.
Kenny, you know that I am absolutely agreeing with you on this. What I'm trying to make a point here, and I'm not doing a very good job. We're letting people maybe that don't tell the truth, and I'm not talking about one side of the aisle or the other,
right,
define our future. Define the narrative. I guess I was out to brunch with some of Audrey's friends, and the topic was all about the girl with the broken nose in the volleyball game that the guy hit the ball too hard and busted her nose. Well, I don't want guys playing with girls, and I don't want anybody with a broken nose, especially some girl. I mean, if it was a broken nose, some guy could, what does he care what his nose looks like? But the girl does, right? I mean, I don't want any of that. But for that to be, I didn't like it as a Catholic. I didn't like it when abortion was the reason why people voted for president. It's one issue.
agree.
I don't want people defining the issue that I'm supposed to think about. The immigration problem was a problem. Should it have happened? Could have been handled better? You and I know, yes. Did it cost some money? Yes. Do I want the girl with the broken nose? No. Do I want guys walking into girls' toilets? No. Is that why I put somebody in the Oval Office when there's a gazillion other problems going on in the world? You got to be careful why you vote. I mean, when these things aren't, they're problems, but they're not the top four neither one of us would list.
I agree, but that's true, but they define it, right? So the politicians, the people that are running it, defining what they want you and I to vote on.
We let them define it, and you and I resist that because we're smarter than that.
Okay, but then how do you stop it as a nation, right?
That's a problem.
Get that to stop.
That's a problem. I mean, I heard one of my guys, leaders of the show said that in a Wisconsin district in New York, or New York, and it was a central Wisconsin district that was so pro-Trump, MAGA, that there were two signs on a big signs that somebody paid for on the side of the road, and one had MAGA on it, and one had Trump's picture. Well, now the MAGA one has been painted over black, and the one with Trump's picture on it, the guy put a big liar through it, because evidently the people in Wisconsin aren't real happy with this tariff stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you gotta be careful what you vote for. And then, you know, I mean, you don't know, you and I won't know what we vote for, but you see this whole smattering of stuff. And plus, you know, the minute somebody gets in office, there's gonna be another issue. So, I mean, this voting thing, I mean, would anybody have voted for Bush as the best guy to handle 9/11? I doubt it. Even Kennedy, would he have been the best guy to handle Bay of Pigs? I don't know. They didn't do a very good job, did they? I mean, this goes all the way back.
You don't know that. You don't really know that. How are you going to know that, right?
How do you know that? That's why I think you have to fall back somehow on training, experience, something that people have done in the past. Okay. And somehow or another, we're not getting those kinds of candidates.
And why aren't we getting them?
I'll say it as nicely as I can, Kenny. The skill set needed to get the office is not necessarily the skill set you want in the office.
That's fair enough.
I mean, you need to be you need to be famous. You need to have a name. You need to be on TV. You need to be something to get in there. And even now, who should be the next president? People pick off like five celebrities off the top of their head. Maybe it should be Bloomberg. It's probably 100 people that we don't even know that have actually done real work in the State Department, the Defense Department. Maybe had a real job in private. There's probably 100 people that are qualified for that job that have no chance at all of ever getting it.
But do those people even want the job?
Well, that's another issue. Why would you want the job?
That's another issue. Is that why would you want the job? If you're successful in business, why would you want to put up with all that bullshit? Yeah, okay, you're president of the country, president of the free world. I get it. But at what expense, right?
Plus, you and I couldn't go down the block and have a drink.
No, you're right. We couldn't.
I don't think either one of us would put up with that.
Yeah, no, not...
Well, I tell you what, that place, it seemed like jail to me.
Yeah, I agree with you.
The only way I could handle it is if every weekend I flew over to Camp David and you and a bunch of other people were there and we could talk all weekend. It's the only way I could handle it.
Yeah.
How could I go a week without talking to you guys? I'm honest about that. I love talking to you guys.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, why would I want to be in that jail? I mean, I'm sure you're so busy for 5 days that it doesn't feel like jail because all you're doing is working and meeting people. But, yeah, how could I never see anybody in the neighborhood, never see anybody from the office? I mean, how could you do that for 4 years?
Yeah, not me. I agree with you. I've got no interest. You know, it's so funny because when I was young and going to college, I went to school in Washington, D.C. because I thought I wanted to be, you know, a politician and a lobbyist and ultimately the president of the United States. And I'm like, oh, my God, thank God.
Did you ever see pictures of Harry Truman walking through Washington with one Secret Service guy next to him? They just go out for a 5-mile walk.
No.
Yeah, there's pictures of him doing it, and it was no big deal in those days.
Yeah, well, in those days, you're right. It was no big deal. But that's not the way the world works anymore. You know what I mean?
I know. It's almost like you want to be part of the fix, but you don't want to be part of the process. It's weird. I don't know. I would want to be a senator. I don't know, what's the highest up you'd want to go? I guess you could be a state rep or something, but that's about as far as you'd want to go. Or other than that, I don't want people to know who the hell I am.
But that's exactly right. I'm not interested. I'm just not interested in any of it. I'm really not. And while, you know, for what you and I do, we have to be interested in kind of what's happening because policy kind of sets the tone. Not that policy and politics price the market, but it does create volatility, short-term volatility, which then creates opportunity for investors, right? Because ultimately, it is profits, it is, you know, margins, it's product, it's all that innovation that drives the markets and prices. But politics do kind of get in the way, especially now, you know, everyone, all they're talking about is tariffs, right? Which is all political. They're not talking about what we should be talking about.
Well, if you look at the plan, and everybody says, you know, Trump's got this huge plan. The plan I see is very simple. He thinks the tariffs are a serious source of revenue. So they're not going to be all gone. And he thinks he's going to replace the tax cut that he's going to put on the income tax, and certainly to corporations, he's going to replace a serious regressive tax to cut back on the progressive tax. And I think that absolutely stone cold sucks. And that's where I get my opinion from, which is, you know, it's like the Ronald Reagan thing where they cut off, well, by the way, the income taxes were a lot higher back then, so I agreed totally with the Reagan's tax cut. But everybody forgets that a year and a half later, he put through the single biggest tax increase in this country. But it was all now, they increased all the payroll taxes.
Yeah.
So they cut it on, now, this thing here, you look at the tariffs in this country. Up until last year, total tariff revenue was like $67 billion. The estimates this year, which I don't think they're going to come close to making, but if they're correct, it's going to be $600 billion, more than like double the corporate income tax. Has anybody looked at those numbers? And anybody really? I don't even think you're on board with that.
No, I'm not. I'm not. But what I would like to know is, you know, as they keep saying, and we talk about this, you know, we're taking in so much money in tariffs, we're going to be so much better off. Okay, well, I want to define that. Tell me exactly what it is, because I don't think they're certainly not telling us yet.
Well, no, the estimate is out there. Matter of fact, if you look at the debtclock.org, they put in next year's estimate on the tariff piece. They'll tell you it's an estimate. The administration's estimate of next year's tariffs was $600 billion, and that's what these guys have in there as an estimate. Now, I don't know if you've read. I read the other day that the first month or so that these things have been on, the receipts have been a lot less than they thought, which doesn't surprise me, by the way.
Yeah.
But if that number, say it's $400 billion, that is by far the single biggest tax increase this country's ever seen. And that's not coming clear to anybody, is it? You've heard about the tax, and people argue about who's paying it. The fact is, that money's coming from somebody, and the somebody's you and me. Where else is it coming from?
No, that's correct. That somebody is you and me, but you also then have a choice as well. Do you, you know, you can choose not to buy that shit, that stuff, right?
But I'm saying you can't dodge the fact that the $400 billion came from somebody. There's gonna be somebody that and plus, actually, two things. We can take a couple minutes. Hal's probably listening, but the couple of things. One is. And I don't know if Trump's capable of this. You need the actual. If you went through this thing on a blackboard, somebody on the other side that's exporting the stuff to us that we're importing is probably going to look at the tariff. Not probably, maybe, depending on the demand curve for their product, is going to say, "Well, we're not competitive there anymore, so we better lower our price here some, so we can remain competitive." Okay, so to that extent, you and I aren't paying the full price of the tariff. Sort of the guy on the other side is a little bit because he had to lower his price, okay? So there's a little bit of that, but it's never been explained that way. Now, but the thing that, the fly in the ointment, the thing stuck up both of our behinds is the guy on this end, if it's just Mercedes and Cadillacs and now the Mercedes is up because of the tariff, maybe Mercedes will drop their price some so they can sort of still compete with the Cadillac. But what also is happening, and I wouldn't put it past our you know, philanthropic CEOs here to say, wait a minute, the price of the Mercedes is now up. We're going to raise the price of the Cadillac. What makes you think that's not going to happen? It happens all the time. The theory is right in front of you. I mean, what makes you think that if all of a sudden there's a 50% tariff on a widget from China, that the guy here making a competitive widget isn't going to raise his price 30%?
No, he could. He could. It'll be interesting to see if that's what happens.
Well, why wouldn't it? It does. I mean, why would he not? He's got less coming over. The demand is going to enable him to do it. People still want it. He might not be able to do 30%, but maybe 15 or 20. I'm saying the combination of whatever price increase is coming, and you can't say there's going to be none, and whatever the tariff themselves are, whether it's $600 billion or $400 billion, that's coming out of the hide of you and me. And oh, by the way, the tax cut is not for you and me. Maybe.
Okay.
I mean, if you follow it all the way through, where am I wrong?
Easy either way.
Where am I wrong? I mean, this is an incredibly regressive tax, and the potential is more than potential. Some increase in prices is going to happen. Who does that can it get any more regressive than that?
Well, no, it can't. But let's just see how it all plays out. See, I'm in the camp that this is all going to come down, and these trade agreements are going to be met, and it's not going to be the disaster that everyone thinks it's going to be.
Well, but you think that at the end of the day, the tariffs are going to be where they started or less?
I think they're going to be less than where we started them, 100%.
I'm talking about less than last year.
Oh, less than last year. I think they could be, because I think if there's a whole conversation about renegotiating the tariffs, then I think it starts at zero. Okay, let's now come up with this new trade agreement. So could we see less tariffs than last year? I think it's a possibility.
Well, we dropped a tariff on the island of penguins, and we also dropped a tariff on Luxembourg, and the only thing they export is artificial teeth.
We actually import artificial teeth. Is that what we do?
When I first saw the thing on Liechtenstein, I thought those guys just had banks. And somebody writes in from the show and says, no, they export artificial dentures. I had no idea. I mean, just whatever. How big? You ever been there? How big is Liechtenstein?
No, I've never been.
You're always very truthful. I know you have two accounts in Liechtenstein banks.
I wish I had two accounts in Liechtenstein.
I could see you going to Switzerland and saying, I don't like these people, and you went right to Liechtenstein instead.
No, maybe by next week I'll have.
Where's the island that people go into? Way the hell down in the South Pacific?
Is it the Cyprus?
It's someplace in the South Pacific that people go there. Who's the God? We had, you were on the show. We had a lady that was on the show that wrote she wrote a book about all these places people are hiding their money. Were you on that day with her? God, that was a long, long time ago, Kenny. And she said one of these islands, she like had to have a guard to place all. It was like some banana republic with five banks that people were hiding their crap in.
Oh, God, I'd like to know where it is.
you'd get out there and open up an account. have a nice week, buddy. SP Futures down 3, NASDAQ Futures down 37. Do we have the professor?
Yeah, we do.
Professor.
Tom.
What do you make of that? Tell me I'm nuts. I'm sure you're going to.
Oh, sorry. I was working on something else. What were you guys talking about?
Well, we're talking about the tariffs and the raise in price and how regressive that is. That if these guys are anywhere near their estimate of $600 billion, which I don't think they are, say it's 400, it's still a tax.
Yeah.
And they plan on using it lowering the progressive income tax. Well, I'm not so sure.
Well, I did a simulation on consumer goods that are highly substitutable, and you know, lots of countries sell them, and then consumer goods that are not highly substitutable, which means they come from one or two countries, and then all the factors of product, all the inputs to production, like, you know, if we're buying rubber from some country, right, that rubber becomes an input to production in the United States. And it just depends on, you know, what type of market you're talking about. If you're talking about imports that we can get from, you know, many different countries, then the effect's not going to be very high on the on the price. But if it's a product that we're importing from a nation, and only that nation provides it, then it's going to be more of a one-for-one. But when it comes to like importing raw material for production in the United States, it's very small. Essentially, it's not going to have much of an impact at all. That was the smallest increase in the price.
But how do you?
So it just depends on what market we're talking about.
But I don't disagree. But if you have a group, if it was done for that reason, you know, and we're trying to get stuff made here and all those kinds of things.
I don't know what the reasons are. Well, I mean, only the politicians know what these reasons
are. Well, I'm saying when you see an estimate of, and like I said, the first month or so, they've come, you know, ridiculously short of their estimates. their estimate is $650 billion in taxes of tariffs.
Yeah.
I mean, no matter how much of a Trumper you are, no matter how much you want to give these guys a chance, that money comes from someplace. It is in the someplace is you and me.
They're multiplying the tariff rate by the amount of.
Right, here's what I don't want to do. I know that the people are for. This is the part I don't quite understand about the people that support this guy. And I understand that the idea of the other side was just as bad or worse. I mean, I'm not. And you know what? I didn't vote for either one. If I was to vote for one or the other, I might have voted for him. But that's not my point. But it's not up to when the guys come out and say, by the way, we're going to get $600 billion next year. That's our calculation. If you like the guy, it really isn't up to me or you or Kevin or Carl to say, oh, no, it's really $100 billion. Why is that our job? They're the ones that are saying six. Right.
I mean, yeah.
And if it is six, it's a lot of dough.
Again, when they say $600 billion.
Yeah.
When they say that, they're assuming that quantity is unaffected by the tariff, and that's just not the case. When you tax something, you get less of it. So,
I'm saying maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe they know everything you're saying. And
there's
the numbers
a big if in that. Let's just say there's a big if in that calculation.
But what
they're saying if
because you like
quantities don't change, we'll get $600 billion.
But what makes you think
what's going to happen?
Because you like the guy, you think that this 600 is the starting number. What makes you think that the number wasn't eight, and they didn't have three guys like Hal sitting there and said we're only going to net six? Maybe this is the net number. How do we know that maybe they didn't do the calculation? You're starting to do.
If you look at every argument between conservative and Republican, or conservative and progressive economists, the ones that work for various administrations, that's all they ever do. One's saying, hey, median wage is down, average wages are up. I mean, that's all they ever do. They cite information that makes the person they're working for look good. Look at, what's her name, the chair of the Council of Economic Advisors under Obama, Christina Romer. If you look at her research, she wasn't all that supportive. Her research, her academic research, wasn't all that supportive of fiscal spending or fiscal the tax cut multipliers and the government spending multipliers. In her research, they weren't that impressive. But when she had to sell the programs that Obama was proposing in his first one or two years, she was saying multipliers were three, and that's not what her research.
That's
economist work for a candidate.
I don't. I'm not going to disagree with any of that stuff. But I'm saying the progress here is that people are being asked to believe. One is we're getting screwed by every country in the world. I don't think that's true, okay? Maybe it is. There might be a few. There might be some deals that we maybe would do over again. I don't know if the North.
Oh, by the way, Tom, we do have a trade deficit with Canada. I just looked it up. It's 60.
Who's the place some. That we're all against that we have the big surplus with?
Yeah. We have.
You know how much
I looked at two different sources.
You know how much the average American.
And we have a trade deficit.
You know how much the average U.S. guy buys in Canada goods?
Yeah.
It's like $1,500. You know how much. How many American goods the average Canadian buys? 9,500.
Well, I just looked it up, and we have a $63.3 billion deficit with Canada, and
I misspoke.
AI.
It was not.
And the same number comes.
But it's
with
who was
Brock's
it? Was
AI.
It? Was one of the ones that he pointed out? Was it Korea? Somebody that's a. Or is it just, or Japan or someplace that was is on a total hit list that we actually have a surplus with? But
I think it might be Australia.
Maybe it's. I think it is Australia.
It's definitely
Australia. I'm sorry. So I stand corrected. What I'm saying, the idea is we're all getting screwed, but we don't talk about the current account deficit, right? Because we're importing Fords from Canada, but guess what? The Ford owns the place, so the profits are coming here, right? Current account deficits are always even, right?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I just came to this conclusion. The party that advocates for the poor, I mean, if you really think about their incentive structure,
which,
they have
which
to keep
party
them
is that?
Well, I mean, I think, I don't think.
Which party?
I don't think the Republicans are going to be accused of looking out for the poor. But the party for the poor, no matter what country it is. Yeah. No matter what country it is.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Whichever party is for the poor, what do they normally do? They give out subsidies in the forms of, you know, various government benefits, and then they restrict the heck out of everything. They restrict energy. They create monopolies. You know, so all those government restrictions, the idea that there's a free market out there is ridiculous.
Well,
so all these restrictions, what do restrictions generally do?
When you,
they create an artificial scarcity that drives things up demand curves. Why would you do that? Well, maybe you want to keep them poor
so that you
have a voter base.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about you have a voter base. You keep them poor because somebody has to take them away. I read something.
Well, if you can get half the population as net tax receivers, then you've got political power.
Well, there's a lot of
right.
There's a lot of stuff that, you know, if you read all, and that's why I love talking to you because we all bring up different stuff. There's a book that I got to find because I think it went south in a flood in my parents' basement. It was welfare is not only for the rich or for the poor. And you talk about we're going to give stuff to the poor. The fact is we give a hell of a lot more to the rich. And the guy had about 15 examples. I mean, number one is Social Security. Wealthier people live longer by far. And it's a regressive. Everybody pays the same tax, right?
Oh, yeah.
And Medicare. Name me.
Yeah, I'm just kind of curious why Social Security taxes aren't collected on incomes greater than, what, $200,000?
Well, because it's supposed to be.
I don't understand that.
Well, because everybody's supposed to get the same amount. I mean, if you're,
but that's not how it works.
Sure it is.
Social Security is a tax.
But I mean, if you get to be 70,
Social Security payments aren't in a retirement fund.
But if you get to be 70, your fee is your stuff after being chairman of three universities before you die and have a gazillion dollars, your stuff for months can be $2,800 like the guy who was a welder. So why should it be? Why should you pay more?
Yeah, and Social Security when it started out. The expected life expectancy, for the typical person in America was less than the age at which you could collect benefits.
That was the beauty of it.
Now you can,
It was.
And if you recommend changing that to the original intent, FDR's original intent, people.
What do you mean by the original intent?
Well, the original intent was to provide. Old age benefits for people who live beyond expected life.
It was set up as a tax system and a welfare system, and they never matched.
Yeah.
They never were designed to match. They just felt they'd adjust it going forward, and they have.
Yeah.
The first person, God bless it, I used to notice stuff. The first person didn't get their check till, was it 1948? It was like $20.
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't happen when Roosevelt was alive. It didn't happen for a while.
Well, policies always lag. Look at the law. People are like, you see social media outraged that they have to get this real ID. It's been law since 2005. They just lagged it 20 years, right? And now you have to get this real ID on your... You have to get this stamp, the star on your driver's license.
It's a royal pain. It's a royal pain in the ass.
You submitted the proper paper.
Have you done yours yet?
Yeah.
The
policy was lagged 20 years, right?
But what? Why do we need? What's the purpose of it?
Well, I think the purpose of that, my brother Ryan's like, he's talking about how he doesn't really want to get this real ID. He doesn't want people tracking him. I go, dude, what do you think you're carrying around in your pocket that you have to recharge every night? That's not really a cell phone. It's a government tracking device. People know where you are at all times. So we're being tracked. So all the people saying that Real ID, it's all about government. Well, they want to know exactly where you are. And there's lots of ways to know that. Your cell phone, this Real ID. I mean, to me, personally, I'm an advocate for open borders. No passports, no border walls. I mean, if you can tear down border walls, why not tear down these
hell, I can remember getting on a plane.
Why do rich people get the opportunity to move wherever they want, but poor people are forced to live in some despotic dictator's country? Right? Rich people can move.
Here you go.
Poor people are stuck.
The Social Security law was passed in what? 33? The first monthly retirement check was issued to Ida Mae Fuller of Little Vermont in the amount of $22.54 in January.
Which was a lot of money back then, by the way.
January 31st, 1940. So it was like 7 years after the law was passed.
Yeah, if you multiply that by 100, you can adjust it for. I think you can adjust for inflation if you multiply by 100.
You know, the last person that was getting Civil War benefits just croaked like a couple of years ago.
Wow.
They had, I don't know what question. Somebody called in one day when people, we had called in, now we'll be texting, but somebody called in and asked, what about all these war benefits? And I dug into it a little bit because Lou was on, and Lou, of course, knows all this stuff, but it was some guy, and it's before Viagra. This dude is 75, and he marries this lady who's like 20-something.
Sounds like Bill Belichick.
Yeah, but he ends up having like four kids, not just one.
Yeah.
And they had the 75th anniversary of Gettysburg. The dude fought in the Civil War. He went to the anniversary. He was still kicking when he was like 98. Was able to. How the hell did you get there? I mean, he still was able to take the train a little bit to get up there. And his daughter lived to God knows when. And the weird part is those guys didn't get paid. I think he started out as a Confederate and ended up on the Union side or something. Whatever. Some bizarre story. But then the guys didn't get paid in the Army necessarily, but they got paid after if you survived. It was the damnedest thing. But then your descendants got the check, but there was no COLA in it. So her last check was still like $15. It never went up. What's the point of that?
A lot of the people that fought for the Union, they were just newly arrived immigrants, and I think a lot of them were just drafted. I mean, if you served in the Civil War on the federal on the Union side, maybe you get some kind of like citizenship or something.
Well, if you and survived, you got something. If you didn't, you got nothing, right?
Yeah, and then the rich people could buy themselves out of service.
That was still going on in World War II, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it was clearly in Vietnam. I mean, Trump didn't go, right?
Yeah.
You could find a way out, but it's kind of a bizarre world. But you kind of get back to this tariff thing, which we kind of beaten up. But it's the idea: those guys are screwing us. I'm going to fix it. We're getting hosed. The reason why. Wealth has not accumulated in the last 25 years. It's not because big corporations have stolen it all, moved everything overseas, and prices have gone up. It has nothing to do with that. None of it's our fault. It's these other countries. Well, that's total BS, so in my opinion. And then, then you run to the next part. When is the last time you saw people talk about tariffs and have the conversation we're having? We're talking about $600 billion in tax increases. I haven't heard that on any TV. Are they afraid of the guy or what? I mean, because say he's wrong and it's 400, it's still the biggest tax increase.
Well, I'll tell you, populists themselves. The Democrats used to be the party of populism, and
they're awful at it now, aren't they?
Some of the things that they're dying on, some of the hills they're dying on, are just really. I mean,
well, you know,
so I think the Democrats are off their populism game.
They haven't learned. They passed in Illinois 2 weeks ago. This will absolutely kill you. If you're in high school, I'm not sure about grammar school, but if you're in a public school, you get to demand kosher or halal food. How the hell do you even provide that? What would that cost per lunch?
Yeah,
I mean, isn't that when you pack your own lunch? If I'm Italian, if I want to eat spaghetti every day, do they have to serve it to me, or can I pack it in my lunch? I mean, what are we talking about?
What I'd be interested in finding out is what corporation, because a corporation is doing this.
Well, somebody's gonna push, I would say, if you were here in Chicago and we were connected, first thing we would do is get together a Kosher on one side.
Why not? He lobbied for that.
Well, one side of the street, a Kosher place, the other side of the Halal Street, and we'll deliver to all the schools. You know, if schools were
in a free market and maybe all the money that the government collects on behalf of schools, if that money was just transferred equally to every parent or every child, and the parents could send their kids to whatever school they wanted to, you know what? You wouldn't have to mandate this stuff and mandate that stuff. There would be little schools popping up everywhere that cater to the needs of parents. And all you got to do is look at grocery stores and churches. They cater. The churches in the South, you go 10 blocks and you might see free churches, and they're all catering to the people that come to those services. You know, autism needs would be met. Students that like auto mechanics, they would have a school to go to. There'd be so much choice. And then education would be standardized, like some matrix, right? Students wouldn't want to be trained.
Well, we're really not standardized here.
They would be skipping to school.
We're not standardized here anywhere near the extent we are in other countries. Yeah. We're nowhere near standard.
The students that are skipping school now would be, or skipping school, they'd be skipping to school, not skipping school.
I don't know about that. I was young once.
Oh, they would, because they'd be going to a school that they value, and they wouldn't want to get kicked out of it.
I valued my school. I didn't want to go to fourth grade. All we talked about was diagram and sentences. I hated it. Just saying. SP Futures
maybe
down.
Maybe your mom would find a school.
Well, there's people there that hated math, too, but they had to sit there. SP Futures down 4, NASDAQ Futures down 20.
But your mom would find a school that you love, and you would love to go to that school.
We all trundled down to the Catholic school. There were 1,600 kids in there. That's where you went. 40 kids in a class.
When you force people to go to a school,
We weren't forced. We were forced by our parents. There's a school. You go. Where else am I going to go? Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs?
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here, right now,
right now. Welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm tomorrow. Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 2, NASDAQ Futures down 17. A little bit of fight this morning. We got Honeywell, they had earnings, they're up. We had Coca-Cola's earnings came out and they were up, and they actually said they don't expect much problem with the tariff. GM came out and said they do expect some problem with the tariff. And let me see what GM is down a little bit. I'll get the exact number here. GM is down 53 cents, so nothing crazy. It was down to 46.71. That would have been a nice spread to do. We did not do that, but we were trying in GM. We have interest rates back up a little bit today. They were down yesterday. At the 30-year rate, 4.71. 10-year rate, 4.24. By the way, if you want to find those on your ticker, TYX is the 30-year and TNX is the 10-year. Ricky, why don't you do some traffic, weather, and sports? And here we go. We've got futures are a little changed, they say. Evidently, we're talking with China. China says they're not talking to us. Crazy news going around. So whatever side you believe, you roll with it. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 134.4%. Hang Seng up 36.1%. Shanghai down 1, 32.86. So Shanghai hasn't done much of anything lately. In Europe, we've got the DAX up 132. They had Deutsche Bank came out with surprise earnings over there, so that kind of spooked those markets to the upside. FTSE up 21.2%. CAC around, however, is down 15.2%. So kind of mixed to the upside with the DAX up mainly because of banks. Bonds up 2 basis points, 4.24. Bund unchanged, 2.51. And we've got oil, which is down again today, down another buck, 61.01. Brent down 122. We're going to have to ask Hal about the difference between the RBOB and the oil, why that spread is really moving on that. Gold down 27 bucks, 33.20. It's kind of settled into this mid-3300s here. Silver up 24 cents, 33.24. We've got foreign exchange. Dollar on track for biggest 2 months fall in more than two decades. Is the British pound the British pound is up to 133, make that 134, and the euro is at 114. They were 108 a while ago, so that's a pretty big move. Crypto, which is continuing to go up here, is up another 100 bucks, say 95,000 even. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. 7:40 a.m. here in Chicago. 78 degrees right now with a high of 72. Considerable morning cloudiness. We might see some sunshine this afternoon. Otherwise, windy and not as warm. Tonight will be partly cloudy and cooler with a low of 46 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 61 degrees right now with a high of 86. Plenty of sun and mostly clear tonight with a low of 61 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, we're looking at 35 minutes. Iman Kennedy from Monroe's. Iman Edens from Lane Cook, 57 minutes. Iman Eisenhower from Wolf, 41 minutes. Iman Dan Ryan from 95th, 25 minutes. Iman Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 44 minutes. Let's talk about the NBA. Yesterday, the Cavaliers beat Heat. Miami Heat 138-83, winning the series 4-0. Golden State Warriors beat Rockets 109-106. Today we got Bucks at Pacers at 5 p.m., Pistons at Knicks at 6:30 p.m., Magic at Celtics at 7:30 p.m., and Clippers at Nuggets at 9 p.m. NHL, yesterday the Panthers beat Lightning 4-2, and Stars beat Avalanche 6-2. Lastly, for the MLB, Cubs at Pirates today 5:40 p.m., and Diamondbacks at Mets 6:10 p.m.
Yeah, what do you? We were talking a little bit earlier with Kenny about money supply, and it looks like they're right back to this 5.2 increase. It seems to be right where they go back to every time there's not some kind of crisis, and even if they say they're fighting inflation, they're doing something. What do you make? Is that part of the reason why the dollar's gotten its ass kicked in the last couple of months, or what do you make of the dollar movement? I mean, it's hard to even talk on the air about dollar moves because most people don't feel they're affected by it, but you really are.
Yeah. If you look at, by the way, I had to change my internet. I had to put a hotspot on my phone because for some reason the house Wi-Fi for the last week has been really sketchy. So I was kind of having a hard time hearing you in that previous segment. But if you go back
I probably didn't say anything worthwhile anyway, so what's the difference?
If you go back to January of 2023 and you look at M2's trend since then, it's parabolic, and I mentioned this about a month ago, maybe 2-3 weeks ago.
No, when you say parabolic, is it? I'm talking at a 5.2 annual rate, it seems.
Well,
to
what
be,
I'm talking about is the trend. It looks like a football. It looks like a bowl, right? It is concave up. And if you look at it from January 23 on, it has this parabolic or quadratic curve. It came down, it bottomed out, and now it's rising. And that parabolic trend is worse than it was when we talked about it about 2-3 weeks ago. It's actually steepened. And
well, months are exactly the same, 5.1 annual, but yeah, it looks like it's steepening because it's gaining on the month before for sure.
Yeah. Well, if it continues on this trend, by next year we might see a 10% increase in them too. Because it's worse than it was. This trend is worse than it was a couple weeks ago, right? Because we've got this new data.
Where do you put real growth?
Well, real growth is really hard because I think nominal GDP is an accurate is a lot more accurate than real GDP growth, because you have to subtract out inflation. Now, what are you going to use for inflation, right? The CPI, we've talked about this. I think it's a horrible metric. I think a better metric would be creating some kind of long-run, smooth path. Create an index out of M2 that is smooth over, say, 20 years. That might be a better metric for inflation. Because the CPI feeds the GDP deflator. So the CPI is understating inflation. Then, of course, the GDP deflator is going to be understating inflation. So I don't think human beings are very capable of creating an inflation index that is accurate. I think maybe ours is less bad than other nations, but I just don't think these price indices really capture
You're a tad younger. When I was doing this as a ute at Pullman, when I was the inflation manager for all the different contracts and so forth and the unions, I'm going to say now that the inflation numbers were spot on. There was really nobody ever, I don't know of anybody who ever said, even with the, I was talking with the guys who made the trucks in the Boston, which was the contract, if the number came out as 1% in a month, which it was, by the way, because it was like 12% for the year.
Yeah, yeah.
I called up and said, it looks like it's 1%. Not one person ever thought to say, wait a minute, these guys are idiots, it's double that or it's half of that.
Yeah.
I will not go far, as far as to say it was perfect, but the end of the year, if the number was 12%, virtually all of society looked around and said, well, some stuff's probably up a little more and some a little less, but yeah, 12% sounds good. It's not like now, where they're saying 2% and everybody knows it's 7. I mean, right now you could go back, I'm going to say 10 years, you and I could pick out 10 things. If we went back to 2008 or 2000, I think I did this once on a snowy day where I couldn't get out of the house. I went back and just looked at, housing prices. Like in the CPI, I'll have it up over the last however many years. Matter of fact, I went back to 2000, I think it was. Hell, I'll do it again because I want to make sure. I keep confusing the two. But if you go back to 2000, they would say CPI indicator, and I'll do this here while I'm talking, that we're up 80% over 2000. And yet you and I probably can name three things. Now, of course, cell phones are down. Maybe blue jeans are down. I mean, probably. But the real stuff people deal with, and I went back to, I use, PTI stuff. If you look at health insurance, you look at houses, and what was the other one? You look at tuition. It's up like three times. Not 80%. It's up 300%. So the fact that they've been, you can call it a lie, you can call it whatever you want to call it. The fact is, it's not anywhere near where things ought to be, and there's no adjustment.
Right? Well, I think the CPI was tracking, the percent change in the CPI, which we call inflation, was tracking pretty well with M2 growth, because in the early 1980s, 1980,
a dollar in January of 2000, sorry, it should be $1.89 today, so it's up.
Yeah.
So something that cost a dollar would cost $1.89 today. Does anybody believe that from 2000? Yeah.
But you look at the percent change in M2 back then. It was about 10-12%. But you look at the percent change in M2 from about 2000 on, and it's hovering between 5 and 10. And inflation, we're told, is hovering between around 3% during that time period.
Well, that's what I was going to say. During the 70s and early 80s,
M2 and inflation are running about the same.
They're running the exact same number, damn near.
Yeah.
And that's what both of us are trying to say. Now all of a sudden, we're getting this BS answer that, it's. I mean,
if they're saying inflation was 3% from 2000 to say 2018, M2 was running about 6.
Yeah.
So inflation is being understated by at least a factor of 2.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even close, and yet we're continuing. So I guess what I'm saying is right now. You think, and by the way, I agree with you, which we're not supposed to because we like to argue, I think that the real growth numbers, I mean, the nominal growth numbers are probably accurate.
Yeah, I think I agree with that, yeah. But I think they're much easier to calculate.
But if you double the deflator, like you and I think maybe we should,
yeah.
We've been in a recession since 2000, or 80% yeah. of the population probably
well,
has.
Well, let's quantify that. Maybe not on Wall Street, maybe not in D.C., but on Main Street, yeah, definitely.
The people, I mean, there's, when you do your classes, when you do, I know you're way more mathematical than I ever was on this stuff, and that's why I love you, bro. But how do you make the split between? I'm going to use the term. I don't even know how to define it, so you have to tell me. You and I go to work, okay, and we make $100 a week. We save 20. That's how we have wealth, and that's. And as wages go up and the prices go up or down or whatever, we can sort of track over a period of time how we're doing. And I'm going to say you and I are probably not doing so hot, but if one of us, our pop croaked and gave us 2,000 shares of IBM or Apple or something over the same 15 years, that guy's doing light years better than the other guy. I mean, not on a, you would expect.
Tom, did you say pop croak?
If your dad died.
Oh, yeah, I think that's like a Chicago Ute thing.
Yeah, it might be a Ute thing. But I mean,
it took me a while to figure out what you're saying.
Yeah, so what I'm saying, when that happened, all of a sudden now you've got a whole different dynamic in that the asset is up way more than the inflation rate, they're saying, and yet you and I, wages are not even really maintaining type of thing.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can. Median income now, according to these guys, this is for one person, not a family, $43,000. This is done at the U.S. debt clock. The median income 2000 was $31,000. So it's up not even the 0.89, right? It's up, what would that be? That would be maybe 48% instead of 89%. Median new home, now, guess what? Guess the number, you'll know.
About 400.
414. That's why this hell is the best. What do you think it was 2000?
Probably about 240.
163. Average new car now 48. Average new car 2022. So your cars have more than doubled, and then some. So they're, but the homes are way doubled and then some. And your median income is up 40%.
Yeah.
Plus you run into after. And what do you call this in mathematics, Hal, when the percentages all of a sudden don't make any sense? In other words, if you and I are working as a, you know, on the chop shop line for a restaurant, we've been making you know, $10 and haven't gotten a raise in 5 years, and yet prices are going up 10% a year. All of a sudden now the 10% on the price in the last year, where if we got a raise of 40%, it's almost not as much as the 10% because we haven't caught up. We're so far behind, the percentages don't work. You know what I'm saying?
Well, if you're talking about the government says inflation is 3% when it's really 6%, then, you know, it's deception. That's all it is, plain and simple.
I think I can get a number here if I can find it, what the money supply was in 2000.
Are we shocked that the government lies?
Yeah, I mean,
world weapons of mass destruction.
But the
wars we were lied into.
I agree with that, but I'm saying in 1978, 79, 80, the politicians lied, but the Bureau of Labor Statistics didn't.
Yeah.
And the people who were there thought like they had a job to do, and I don't think. Every president, including Kennedy,
well,
by the way.
One thing that's different, I think everything has gotten so politicized, right? Like Saquon Barkley playing golf with the president. He can't do that. He gets excoriated on social media. Why can't he play golf with the president? You can't, I mean, just because you're playing golf with him and you're having a conversation with him doesn't mean you agree with him. You're just having golf. You're playing golf with him and you're chit-chatting with him.
Well, but you it's not Barkley. It's
the
reputation in some quarters of the guy is the only people getting near him are people making a deal and have money.
Yeah,
you know, it's not. I mean, if you and I were president, I don't know if anybody want to play golf with us, because you know there's a funny thing that happened.
Maybe in the course of having that conversation with the guy, You get them to change on something, or you get them to soften
maybe
on something.
Maybe I went to this. It's a firm here in Chicago. It's a big minority brokerage firm. I don't want to go into the who was and whatever. So I get invited to their party up at 111 Jackson, right? And so the building, it was a hotter than hell summer day. The building didn't know they were having a party, so they shut the air off at 5 o'clock, and it's roasted in there. Of course, everybody's wearing a suit and tie, and it was everybody who was anybody politically is in there, and then there's me. You know, I don't know how I got invited, but there I am, roasting. And we had a governor here, Governor Quinn, and he was famous for being, he wasn't the world's best governor, but he was famous for, he was absolutely straight as an arrow, if there can be such a politician. Didn't take money, none of that kind of stuff. Well, here's the, then there's all these other guys, like Madigan and a couple other dudes. Well, I'm sitting there, guess who he ends up talking to the whole time? Me. Nobody else to talk to him. Because he had Eddie Burks and those guys, whoever the other guys were there, there's a line waiting to kiss the ring. So it depends on the guy. I mean, if I don't think anybody cared if they played golf with Harry Truman. He didn't give you anything, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the reason why these goes to Mar-a-Lago with a briefcase is they think they're going to get something out of it, or do something.
But that's what government does. Government does what?
But to degrees,
breaks,
to varying
you
degrees.
You have Democrats and their friends, and you got the Republicans and their friends, and neither group of these people like competition. So what do? They lobby government to protect them from the competition.
There's degrees
the protections, and then continues it.
I was talking about what Carol.
And
earlier.
That creates an artificial scarcity, which drives up prices.
Without a doubt, but there's degrees to this.
Yeah.
I mean, the old Chicago system. I mentioned this. You're an economist on your way to a Nobel Prize. George Stigler said he actually thought that the patronage system could be more efficient than the Secret Service. I mean, the civil service system. At some level. But I don't know if he'd agree with it now at the level you see in Washington with the lobbyists and all that stuff where it's not even close to being.
In the 1800s, I've read some histories where dudes are walking around literally with bags of cash and the cash is falling out of the bag, right? So I think it's just an old, I mean, government. I'm actually rethinking the founders. I mean, who was at the Continental Congress right before the Revolutionary War was declared? It was the merchants.
Well, sure.
It was the powerful merchants, bankers, major landholders, right? Landowners. And taxes, I mean, the king and queen kind of left the colonies alone. And they started raising taxes. They started trying to collect the taxes. And it wasn't much of a tax. It was 2%, maybe 3% on your income. Right.
It was the trend was unmistakable. The trend.
Yeah. So what do these American colonists, colonial oligarchs want to do? They want to replace Britain as the government. So what do? They drum up this angst against the British crown. And they write this document called the Declaration of Independence. And then they they only had about 30% approval,
which was quite a document, by the way.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, they had to sell the people of the Americas on this revolution, and so it's an awesome document, right? And it convinces about a third of the colonists to revolt against the British, and we gain our independence. And then they bring out the Articles of Confederation. But it wasn't a strong enough central government for these oligarchs in America to create protections for their industry. So they rolled out the Constitution. And as soon as the Constitution was rolled out, these groups of people were trying to erode it. And they've done a pretty good job of eroding it since it was ratified.
But people have eroded it, and people have come back against it. And you had the, you know, the robber barons and the railroads.
There were way too many restrictions on the ability of people to use government to protect them from the competition.
People would go too far and being greedy, and all of a sudden you'd be a reaction to it. I mean, it's been a struggle the whole way. But in general, I mean, that's why you ended up having a lot of what the government does. You gave stuff to railroads because you needed people needed the capital. Okay, so you gave them land on either side. Said, okay, well, the first one like that was the I&M Canal here. I'm not so sure. How did they get the land for Erie Canal? Is it the same way? Did they give the guy land on each side of it?
Well, I think that was probably more of a New York State thing. I don't think that was a federal government thing, because New York State was not federal land.
Okay.
The federal lands were west of Mississippi.
Well, because here it was, they gave...
I think the canal system was created by the New York State government.
Okay, so that was totally a New York deal.
Yeah, it had to be, because all that land was private. Right. So New York State had to use
that was already that was owned already. That was owned already.
Yeah.
Well, here it was owned by the Indians. So, but they cut a deal with those guys, which screwed them.
Well,
but,
apparently, there was a transaction, and what we call American settlers, they owned the land. So it was privately owned by colonists, right? They
there.
Like, for example, the Bronx was purchased by some guy from, I think it was. He was Dutch, and he purchased all the land of the Bronx. I was reading about why they called the Bronx and the Bronx River. They actually changed the name, the I think it was the CKS to X, right? Maybe 80 years ago. But I was reading about that whole thing. He purchased like 500 acres or something that became the Bronx from the natives.
Well, I had a thing. You're better at this. I found a list of the richest people ever in the country, but it wasn't in scratch-o. It was in, at their time, the percentage of the GDP, it was the percentage of the U.S. government budget.
Mm.
In the 10 names on there, the only guy I think I could even, was it Rockefeller might have been the only name I recognized. There were some dudes, a couple of the people were Dutch and owned part of Manhattan because it was originally Dutch, right?
Yeah, New Amsterdam.
Yeah, and they owned like buku parts of, and some guy was a fur trader.
And I think it was kind of swampy too,
but somehow or another, there was a fur trader. There was a guy that had a ferry that got you back and forth from Manhattan to Brooklyn or something. I mean, these were people that... the federal government spent like $5 million a year, and these guys had like two. it was way beyond, anything that they could ever spend or anything like that. But there were guys in transportation, but the transportation wasn't before railroads. It was like ferry companies and things like that.
Well, rivers were the highways, and that's why the eastern part of the United States thrived so much, because it had a really incredible river system, and the land was relatively flat, and so you could more easily get goods up and down rivers instead of over mountains, right? The river system was key, and the natural harbors were key to the economic thriving of the colonies.
Well, Chicago became...
That's why New York is so big, because it has the East River, the Hudson River, and then they built these canal systems. So commerce really flowed through New York City.
Well, your first railroad was at Chesapeake in Ohio, which did just that. Yeah. It went from Chesapeake, Baltimore, to the Ohio River.
Well, then when they built the canal system along the St. Lawrence River, that really boosted Chicago. Because now you could get it through.
It was more to Great Lakes, but the Chicago area, because we got a dash here.
Yeah.
You look at Chicago, other than a few angle streets, which are Indian trails.
Well, Chicago also benefited from the Mississippi River system, too.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is it the square grid here? Was because they gave every other square mile of property to the people to build the I&M Canal, which linked Lake Michigan to the Des Plaines River and essentially the Illinois River. It linked Chicago to the Mississippi.
Yep.
And that's what put Chicago on the map, was the link between. But up until that time, St. Louis was way bigger.
Yeah. I've been reading about the economics of geography, and it's just so, every time I read something about the economics of geography, I just get blown away.
Well, that's why the Transcontinental Railroad started in Omaha, because that's about as far up the Missouri.
Well, you didn't need a railroad east of that, because you had all this river system.
Well,
right?
you're way better off with the railroad. What happened was
You started in Omaha to go west.
Yeah,
you had the river system.
Because they could get stuff up the Missouri.
Yeah.
The ties and the rails and all that kind of stuff, even the locomotives. But as soon as the Northwestern was finished, the Council Bluffs, that all came by rail. A lot easier to get it there by rail. But
if you think about Idaho, Idaho's like sub-Saharan African nations.
You guys were part of the Louisiana Purchase, for God's sake.
Yeah, I know, but Idaho was landlocked, right? It was very difficult to get into Idaho. Trade was very difficult in Idaho until they built the dam system and brought in the railroads, and then Idaho was able to grow. A lot of the Rocky Mountain states are like the Central African sub-Saharan nations. They're landlocked, and the river system isn't all that great for navigation.
Yeah, you can't get out of Denver. I mean, you can't. There's no river out of there.
No, you can't. But with railroads and the Columbia River being dammed up from the Pacific Ocean all the way to Lewiston, Idaho, it made commerce.
Yeah.
I mean, Idaho has a seaport called the Port of Lewiston, and it's because of the dam system and the lock system.
Well, Portland is how far from the shore? 40 miles or something?
Yeah, yeah. The Columbia River is really wide.
Yeah. All right, Al, we got to – Ash, buddy, you're not on break now. You're schooling?
Oh, I'm wrapping up. This is the last week of class, so I'm just wrapping things up and grading things.
All right, buddy,
I was grading last night till 9 o'clock.
Good stuff as usual. Take care of yourself. SP Futures now down 30. NASDAQ Futures down 141. We've turned down here some. I'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.